Well, good morning. You are listening to 88.5 KRFY, and this is the morning show on Wednesday, August 24th. We are live in the studios, and I'm Susie Prez, one of your hosts.
And I'm Chris Bessler, your co-host. How are you doing this morning, Susie?
I'm doing great, and I really appreciate that you're sitting across from me with a smile on your face on this beautiful Wednesday. At the end of August, it's the almost the last Wednesday in August, but
yeah,
we have one more.
Yeah, it's actually the cooler weather makes you think we have reached the end of summer, but I think we still have a little bit of summer left, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you want to know the actual facts of what summer looks like from the National Weather Service, well, or do you want to say what's
actually
happening
today? Heck of a show today, as we like to say. We are speaking on the proposed school levy that's up for vote on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. And we're going to break this show up into three segments, actually, or actually two segments. First, we're going to be speaking with Sean Woodward, the superintendent of schools, and Lisa Hall. She's the chief financial officer. They're in the studio with us right now. Just say hello, Sean and Lisa.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Thank you for being here. We're going to go through the facts of the levy with Sean and Lisa and what the proposal is and what the need is. And then we're going to take a short musical break, about 20 minutes or 25 minutes in. And then we're going to bring on two folks that are supporters of the levy and two folks that are opposing the levy. And they are Kenan Perry and Matt Deal as the supporters, and Angelo Lancicero, excuse me, and Dan Rose, who are opposing the levy as it's configured. And we're going to have a pro and con. We're going to give each side an opportunity to voice their best arguments for or against the levy.
And you know really why we do the morning show, I think we found out, Chris, that we really strive to give the community a voice and through the airwaves and to bring news and information that can inform and inspire our citizens. And so that's why we're doing this today.
Yeah, and hopefully we have a lot of voters listening in and they can hear the arguments pro and con, and that'll help inform their decision on how they're going to vote on Tuesday. Although I will mention that voting is possible right now. You can do a absentee ballot, and you can vote until Friday at the county administration building, so you don't actually have to wait till Tuesday.
And we are recording this interview and session today. It will be on our website as a podcast in case you can't hear the whole thing or you want to have your friends listen to it later in the day.
And it is possible we'll go a little bit long today, so we'll just judge that as we get into the second segment of the show. But first, let's back up just a bit. Okay. Susie, you were going to tell us about the weather.
From the National Weather Service, currently it's 57 degrees, and we can expect a high today of 77, partly sunny, with winds 7 to 11 miles per hour. I wonder why it's 11 and not 10. You know, but only 11, up to 11 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with lows 51. And Thursday, mostly sunny with highs near 79, back close to 80 with light winds. Thursday night, partly cloudy, lows 52. So it's kind of getting a little bit of a feel of fall, but not quite yet.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with there's still summer left here.
Actually, I'll go with that, too.
Yeah, and technically we have about a month of summer left. Some other things going on around town. A pretty interesting event is happening on Saturday. It's called the Sandemonium. It's kind of a local version of a Comic-Con, or it's a science fiction fantasy event where people that are really into those genres come. And last year was the first time this was put on. It was put on in part by the Bonner County Library, East Bonner County Library, and they had about 500 people show up to that. So they're expecting even more this year. It's going to be held Saturday pretty much all day. And this year, because of the huge crowd that they have, it's going to be held at the Forest Bird Charter School. And, of course, there's a lot of other things going on around town, but we have a big show today, so we want to get right to it.
Yep, and you can always go and look at Sandpoint online to find out more about what's going on, or krfy.org, and we have a community calendar page.
Yeah, and with all the details on things going on in town, and, of course, there's always a lot going on in our town. And with that, let's turn to the topic today, where, again, we're talking about the school levy that's up for election, up for vote on Tuesday. We have with us Sean Woodward, the superintendent of schools, and Lisa Hall is the chief financial officer. And, Sean, let's start at the start, if you will. why is the school district asking for a plant facilities levy, and briefly, what will it fund?
Okay, well, I guess I can start with our process and how do we get where we're at here today. Basically, over a year ago, I was tasked by the board to get a committee together to begin building a facility plan for the future for our school district. During that time, we thought it would be important to hire an outside consultant by the name of Teeter Associates to help us with this task. Teeter Associates utilized three architects as well as a professional cost estimator to work with our team. The consultants were tasked with visiting each school site to conduct two things, a functional adequacy report, as well as assess all the major physical components of each of our building. We didn't have any pre-designed notion as far as what were we going to recommend or ask of the school board prior to getting our committee together. We embarked in a data-driven process prior to coming up with our recommendation. I should add, because there's been lots of questions about this in the community, that who was on our facility planning committee? There were four parents with children in the district, two community members without children in the district, five staff members, one teacher, our CFO, our facilities director, a school principal, and myself, and two board members. How did we get this committee together? Was I asked school principals of each of our 11 buildings to ask someone to serve, and it was like pulling teeth in some cases to get someone to serve, because it was a committee that had to work. It was a working committee that ultimately might land on something, a recommendation that could prove to be controversial in our community. The facilitator in the of the committee engaged us in what he called a data dump. He went to all of our school sites, did a lot of research and a lot of assessments along with his experts, and then gave us all of the information, and we spent six meetings working through the functional adequacy reports, working through the physical assessments of each one of our buildings, looking at cost estimates, enrollment projections, et cetera. And we looked at, you know, what would it cost to rebuild, to renovate, et cetera. And finally, we landed on a recommendation to our school board. And that was your original question. What was our recommendation? It was to rebuild Sandpoint Middle School, rebuild most of Washington Elementary School, rebuild Northside Elementary School, rebuild the shop out at Clark Fork Junior Senior High School, remove all of our portables and our outbuildings at Sandpoint High School, and add four new classrooms so we could get rid of the portables on that site, and then redesign our athletic fields on our division property.
I just wanted to back up just for a moment. Originally, you said the school board tasked you or asked you to put together a plan for renovating and the facilities. What prompted the school board to ask for that in the first place?
Well, it's been years and years and years that we've known we've had subpar, substandard facilities. And 4 years ago when I arrived, I was shocked at the condition of our building. So I've been asking for 4 years, you know, when is the right time for us to finally go to our voters to take care of these facilities? It was very difficult. My first year here, we were looking at cutting between $750,000 and $1 million out of our operating budget. We were still fairly deep in the recession, and the board just didn't think it was the right time to go out to the voters for something like this. So we've waited and waited, and finally a year ago they said, let's get this committee together and let's do this.
Thank you.
May I add a technical piece to answer this question?
Mm-hmm.
So public schools, kindergarten through 12, under the Idaho Constitution, are afforded only two funding mechanisms to either construct new buildings or renovate new buildings. One is called a bond, and the other is called a plant levy. So the answer as to why a plant levy is there are only two mechanisms. There are no state appropriated dollars annually. There are no other state dollars for new construction of K-12 or modernization of K-12 buildings. So that's why.
Well, let's follow that one up. Why a levy instead of a bond? That's a question that a lot of folks have asked, I think.
So with that, I mean, people have thought, oh my gosh, they're just going for a plant facility levy because it's going to be an easier task to pass? And the answer is yes. Our committee talked about that. A bond would require two-thirds supermajority.
66 and two-thirds percent would have to say yes.
Exactly, mm-hmm. 66 and two-thirds. And this requires 55%. And our committee felt like it's a daunting task to get 55% to mm-hmm. vote yes on any kind of bond or levy, let alone.
But both are supermajorities, but the bond has a higher bar to clear.
Exactly, mm-hmm. yes.
So that was the only reason you went for the bond instead of the levy? There was no legal, state regulatory reasons?
No, there's no state. Well,
for listeners that aren't really, this would be for you, Lisa, what's the difference between a levy and a bond? Give us that in a thumbnail.
So if your question's what's the difference between a plant levy?
A plant levy, okay.
And a bond.
Okay, yeah.
A bond in duration can be 1 to 20 years, and a plant levy in duration can be 1 to 10 years. The maximum that a district can levy in total in bonds is 0.004 of the December 31st prior year net taxable value of the property within the school district. A plant levy, depending on the voter threshold, and there are three, 55%, 60%, or supermajority, drives the rate or the amount of the net taxable value of the school district, respectively, 0.002 for 55% approval, 0.003 for 60% approval, and 0.004 for a supermajority.
Okay, so we're at the low end of that
right.
spectrum there.
Correct.
It's kind of a technical answer, but
right.
thank you for that. It does one funding mechanism, the bond versus the levy, is it more economical to do one versus the other in terms of the cost of money?
So constitutionally, they're structured very differently. A bond, by definition, is an interest-bearing instrument. In other words, you pass a bond, and then you go out to the market and you sell the bonds, and you get all the money up front in interest-bearing over the duration of the bond, say 20 years. A plant levy, by definition, is a pay-as-you-go mechanism. In other words, as the property taxes are receded, then you would collect the money, and you would accumulate enough money until you could start the projects. And those payments are spiked. As a property taxpayer, you receive your bill in December. You probably pay the first half in January. As a taxing district, we receive the money in the end of January, first spike payment. Same thing happens second half of the year. As a property taxpayer, you receive the bill in June. You pay it by July. As a taxing district, we receive the second spike payment at the end of July. In October of 2015, the Idaho Supreme Court made a ruling that said that public entities can enter into lease purchase agreements and they will not be considered debt. What this allows all public entities in Idaho to do now, and Idaho is one of the last states in the nation to adopt this as law, it's going to allow, if this levy prevails on August 30th, for us to actually enter into lease purchase agreements. So much like the bond funding mechanism, we will go out to the market in December of 2016, and we will sell our bonds, and we will get all the money up front, and then it will be interest bearing. So this is new in Idaho. We have, as public school districts, 114 public school districts, and presently 86% of them this taxing year have either a plant or a bond in place. And in total, this year, that's $194 million worth of bonds or plant levies in place. Or maybe to frame that, the state appropriation this year is about, for K-12, is about $1.7 billion. So the plant levies in place and the bonds in place singly this year represent 11% of the annual appropriation. circling back to my original answer, why a property tax levy? Because that's constitutionally the mechanism available to public school districts to build new buildings or to renovate buildings.
Okay. One question that's also arisen is, does using this lease arrangement expose the district to more risk?
No, anathema to that. What the lease purchase agreement will allow the school district to do is minimize risk. So in December of 2016, the school district will lock in an interest rate versus waiting years under the pay-as-you-go mechanism, which then, of course, couples construction inflation, which we estimate is about 4.5% annually. So we will be able to lock in an interest rate in December of 2016. We will have pre-qualified construction bidders once the state approves the architectural designs, which right around probably February of 2017, we will go out for public bidding for the construction, and all of the projects, with the exception of redesigning or replacing the fields on the division parcel and the Washington Elementary School project, we will lock in the cost by February of 2017.
Okay. Sean, let's circle back on what the levy is going to fund a bit. We don't want to go into a lot of detail, and there's a ton of information for people to see the specific projects that the levy is going to fund. So basically, it's rebuilding three schools, and it's making a bunch of improvements throughout the district. But one of the questions that has arisen that I've seen is, why are we getting rid of the middle school? Couldn't that be repurposed in some way?
Yeah, that's a great question there. So that building was assessed both physically and functionally by outside professionals, not just our own staff. Basically, they looked at 19 different physical components of that building. Excuse me. The smoke is gone, but I still have the smoke. Yeah. I do not smoke myself, though, yeah. For the record. each physical component that they assessed was assigned a weighted maximum value based on the value or cost of that particular component up against the overall value or cost of the building. So I'll use a quick example. Flooring, as one of the 19 physical components, could have received a maximum value of 8 points, meaning that represents 8% of the value of the building, the flooring, just that physical component. So each of those 19 components were assessed and given a score based on their condition. 10 of the 19 components were rated unsatisfactory, and 6 of those components were rated poor. They recommended replacing 16 of the 19 major components. So this 100-point system that they use, the overall score that Sandpoint Middle School received was 29 points. So another way to look at it is, they recommended replacing 71% of the value of that building. So just to get it up to a good rating, and this isn't surprising because that building was built in the mid-50s, that's just the physical components. You also have the functional components, such as the size of those classrooms. The classrooms were built in the 50s for smaller class sizes. So they used to build classrooms at 600 to 700 square feet. Today, they build them at 900 square feet. So that's just one example of if we reinvest 71% of the value of that building back into the building through a modernization, we would want to make the classrooms bigger, which is going to drive that cost up even further. The cafeteria is too small. The office space is too small. So our committee looked at that and realized that quickly we were looking at replacing 80% or more of the value of that building. And at the end of the day, it could be more expensive to fully modernize versus replacing. So that's why our committee made the recommendation to replace. It's just not one physical component. We're looking at 16 of the 19 major components.
Okay. And so that's the Sandpoint Middle School, which would be taken down. A new middle school would be built on the property that the school district already owns over near Pine Street. And then the area between the new middle school and the existing high school would become athletic fields. Can you address the athletic fields? I've heard some comments. Well, do they really need these athletic fields? What's the rationale in doing the athletic fields?
Great question. So what we this district has been known for, unfortunately, because this is ancient history, not really ancient history, but it feels like it sometimes, in that it was, I think, 1983 that we passed a 20-year bond. The projects were, unfortunately, left unfinished. There wasn't adequate dollars coming in to finish what the district wanted to do. And during that time, there was a bad feeling in people's mouths that if you're going to ask us for money, finish the projects on time and on budget or under budget. Our committee looked at it and thought, okay, we've got an opportunity here on this 42-acre parcel. Let's do it right. Let's get the middle school moved at a further distance away from the high school. Let's have a different entry point off of Pine instead of off of Division. And let's reconfigure the fields to have best use of all of that green space. The track is not in the best spot at all. It is not in the best condition. We've had problems with trees and roots and all kinds of things from the neighborhood behind there. But at the end of the day, we felt like, okay, to do this right, this is a recommendation that we're going to move forward, and this is a solution for the next 50, 60 years. We do not want to have to come back 10 years down the road or 6 years or 7 years and say, you know what, we didn't quite do what we wanted to do on this piece of property. So that's that's where we're at.
Okay.
I have a quick question about assessing the need. Originally, you had kind of this overview look at the need potential versus replacement and or, fixing things up. What, did you just go with the one assessing group? I don't even know what you call it exactly.
Yes.
And you felt competent. You kind of looked into their background, and they had a long track record for pretty close assessing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is what this group, this is their business. This is what they do for a living. The one gentleman, first off, I'd like to say that originally the physical assessments of the building were done by our director of facilities. That after he had done his assessments, they were followed up by experts outside of our district that reassessed everything that our guy assessed. The person who did this took a look at each of the components in each of the building, agreed with much of what our facilities director had to say, scored some of the areas higher, some of the areas lower. But yeah, we're very confident. I believe the gentleman who did our particular assessment has done over 300 of these in his time working in construction management and school building design, et cetera.
Okay. Again, we're not going to get into a ton of details on the individual projects, but there are two other big parts of this. And one is Washington School is going to be essentially rebuilt, as well as Northside Elementary School. Can you speak to the need to replace those buildings as well?
You bet. A similar methodology was the same methodology was used to assess the condition of both of those buildings. Both of those buildings were also rated unsatisfactory and recommended for replacement. I'll give you two quick examples. When you're talking about 19 major physical components, of which most of them are recommended replacement, there's all kinds of maintenance that we're doing at those schools on a regular basis that's highly disruptive to student learning. I'll give you one example at Washington. Steam leak repairs are common, where we have to jackhammer floors. We have to get into the original piping from the 50s and to keep the heat running. Last year, we had to get into the pipes at Washington on several occasions just to keep the building warm. Sometimes jackhammering happens when school is in session, unfortunately, because when the heat goes out in the middle of winter, we have to address it. Northside Elementary, one example would be we had a septic or a sewage leak underneath the kitchen. We've got to go in and we've got to take care of that. It resulted in having to bring in porta potties. It resulted in having to bring in outside water sources, et cetera. So with all that said, the same method was used for rating those schools, and they were found to be unsatisfactory from a physical standpoint.
Okay. And I will mention for listeners that there are complete details on each of the projects that are going to be funded in the levy on the school district's website, That's at lpost.org. And if you look on the left side, you'll see a link to the facilities master plan information. And if you go there, you can get you can see drawings. Now, these aren't the final architectural drawings, but more like a site plan, like where the buildings would be. Is that right?
Exactly. And some people have asked us, well, why in the world wouldn't you design the whole thing first so we could see what you're looking at? And that is not done in public school systems, because the cost of design is 6 to 7% of the overall cost of the project. So you've got to pass the measure first. Then there's a process where you go through a process called educational specifications, and that's how you actually design the building. And there's lots of input from staff. Community has an opportunity to participate, et cetera.
So okay. What you're saying is hiring an architect to do those plans is very expensive. So you've got an idea and you've formulated a very clear plan, but to come up with architectural drawings and things like that, it's the next step.
Exactly. It would be highly unusual and highly irresponsible for us to invest that kind of money into design prior to passing a
Yeah, that's a lot of money to spend on architectural drawings before you don't even know if you have a project.
Exactly.
Let's back up one more question on the process part of it. You know, you described how it's been a year in development, and there have been quite a number of public hearings, I believe. It came up before the school board a number of times. There are some public hearings going on. I mean, public informational meetings going on this week as well. Is that correct?
Yes. We have four more. We have two tonight. One is at Washington Elementary School at, 5 o'clock. And the next one is at Sagal Elementary School at 6:30. Those are both tonight.
And people can come and ask questions. What's the format on these?
Yes, they're about 45 minutes in length. We do about a 20-minute presentation with time for 20 minutes or so of questions as well.
Okay. One question that has popped up that I've seen consistently is, why the August 30 date for the election? Lisa
public
Hall.
Right. Yeah. Public school districts have four set dates annually to bring levies before the voters. And those dates are in March, in May, in August, and November. All taxing districts in the state of Idaho have only one day a year, which is the second Thursday in September, to levy property taxes. So as an example, this August 30th voter date, if it's successful, Lake Ponderay School District will levy on the second Thursday in September of 2016, its first year of the six-year levy amount. As I described, then property taxpayers pay their taxes, and we would receive our first payment at the end of January of 2017. Alternatively, say the school board decided to hold the election in November of 2016. Again, you can levy only on one day a year. Now, you've brought the measure to the voters in November of 2016, and you must wait almost an entire year until September of 2017 to levy the taxes, and you'd receive your first payment in late January of 2018. So by choosing the August date, you are going to receive, as a taxing district, your first payment within about 4 months, versus choosing a later date, then you forfeit well over a year. And again, construction inflation at 4.5% with these projects would add $2.2 million.
Okay.
One of the questions, and thank you for that answer, that's really clear. One of the other questions people have is, how much is this going to cost me as a taxpayer? I know there's a lot of information out there, and you can see the charts and things, but just as an example.
So with the plant levy 55% voter approval, it's written into the Idaho Constitution that generates a 0.002 tax rate. Or translated, for a net taxable value of $100,000, that would be $200 annually for 6 years.
Okay. So if your house value was $100,000, your taxes would go up $200 a year for 6 years.
So the lexicon is important here. There's a difference between assessed value and net taxable value. There are different exemptions in Idaho, the largest of which is called the homeowner's exemption, pretty unique to our state. And the maximum homeowner's exemption is $100,000 for the tax year that starts January 1st, 2017. So if your question is, if you had net taxable value of a home and 1 acre of property of $100,000, would the plant levy cost that taxpayer $200 annually? Yes.
So that would be, in this example, a home that was assessed at $200,000, the net taxable value would be $100,000.
Because of the homeowner's exemption, knocks it down to $100,000.
Right. Exactly. Okay. And if I might add, too, there's some misinformation out there that this levy will double your property tax. We've had people calling and panicking and asking me that question, saying, oh, my gosh, do I simply double my property tax? And the answer is no. Let's look at just the school portion, which represents about, Lisa, is it 20% or so?
Right. It's 20.6% of the average Bonner County current year tax rate. So we are one of 39 taxing districts, and the average Bonner County tax rate for this year per $100,000 of net taxable value is $892. And our current tax rate is $184.
The school portion of,
Right. Right. So there are municipalities, the county, fire, cemetery, library, all public services.
Okay, so let's put this one a different way people may even get their heads around. Let's say right now you pay annually $1,000 in property taxes. About 20% of that is what's going to the school. And you would probably see about how much would be added to that as a result of this?
Right, another 20%.
Another 20%.
Right, the rate currently is 184.
About $200 more, right?
Yes, so exactly, your taxes, not about.
Yeah, okay. Your tax would go from, if you're currently paying $1,000, it would be about $1,200.
Correct.
Okay. And there, basically everybody needs to kind of figure out how it's going to impact them, and I believe there is information with a chart on the Lake Pendre School District website. Again, that's lposd.org. And look on the left side and click on the the facility master plan information.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. Listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. It's the Wednesday edition of the morning show. We're here in the studios with Sean Woodward, superintendent of the Lake Pendre School District, and Lisa Halls, CEO?
CFO.
CFO. Chief Financial Officer.
Financial Officer.
And answering questions, really giving us the facts about the upcoming levy vote for the school districts.
And actually, I think we've covered about as much as we're going to be able to cover in our first half hour here. But what we want to do is give you just a few minutes to wrap things up, Lisa and Sean. And then for our listeners, we're bringing in folks that are going to be speaking in support, and those are going to be speaking in opposition to the levy. So, Sean and Lisa, would you like to give us a couple minutes of wrap-up here?
You bet. I'd just like to say that there was been a lot of work done by a lot of people over the last year plus on this recommendation, and we believe it was a very solid process that was data-driven and highly objective. And at the end of the day, I think most people would agree that our schools are in poor condition. Poor condition does influence student learning, and it's something that we're obligated to take care of as a community. If you have questions, if you're getting information out there that just doesn't seem right, it's probably not. Please contact the school district, and we can clarify any misconceptions that may be out there. But I certainly thank the opportunity today.
Okay, and there are some informational meetings again tonight. There's two tonight. One is at Washington Elementary School at 5 p.m. And then there's one as well at Farm and Stidwell at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, there are informational meetings again at the Sandpoint Middle School at 5 p.m. and at Sagal Elementary School at 6:30 p.m. So opportunities for people to show up and get their questions answered.
Yeah, exactly. And it's okay to have questions. It's a big subject. And there are people to help answer those. And Lisa, did you want
to... I would just echo what Superintendent Woodward has said and encourage anybody that has technical questions to call myself or Sean. Our phone numbers are 263-2184. I'm extension 1018. And I think you're extension 1015?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Lisa and Sean.
We're going to put a song on right now, and then we'll have our second segment with our guests that are in support of and opposing to this school levy. But this song, in 1967, a young man who was 17 years old from the Jersey Shores joined his first band. His name was Bruce Springsteen. And this song is called My Hometown. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is 88.5 KRFY. And that was Bruce Springsteen, My Hometown. We're here live in the studios of KRFY. This is the morning show with Chris and Susie, and we're having a special edition of the Wednesday morning show focusing on the upcoming school levy vote. I just want to, again, reiterate that the reason we do this kind of a show is so that our listeners and our citizens can be informed and be inspired to get involved in the community process, the civic process. We want to thank our guests. We have a whole new set of guests in the studio. And Chris, you can introduce them.
Yes, and it's a full studio in our little studio here. We actually have four guests with us. We have two folks that are opposing the levy as it's currently written, and that's Angelo Lontacero. Say hi, Angelo, just so people get your voice.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay. Yeah, as well as we have Dan Rose. Say hi, Dan.
Good morning.
And Angelo, you're a retired construction administrator. Dan, you're an advocate of a one school at a time approach on this. And as for supporters, we have with us Kendon Perry. Say hi, Kendon.
Good morning, Chris.
And Matt Deal.
Good morning.
And Kendon, you're the chair of the Citizens Facilities Committee. And Matt, you're the facilities director for the school district.
Correct.
And you're going to speak in support of the levy. And with that, what we're going to start with on just a few words on the format, we're going to give both you guys up to 5 minutes at the start here to just make your case and inform our listeners of why you oppose or why you support the levy. And then we're going to have a chance for follow-up questions. In the follow-up questions, we're going to hold it to about 90 seconds, about a minute and a half to answer these questions. And that's just so we have an opportunity to cover a variety of questions before we run out of time. And if you want to make a rebuttal to the other side, you'll get an equal amount of time on rebuttal. We're just trying to run it right down the middle with the time that's allotted to each side. And we would ask, you know, hold your rebuttal until the other side gets done speaking so we can have some...
Just indicate to us that you want to have a rebuttal or Chris will ask at the end of their answer.
Yeah, just wave your hand. That works. and with that, again, Angelo and Dan, would you like to give us your opening statement?
I would, please. I do appreciate the opportunity to have both sides present their case and state their arguments. With that, I'd like to make a full disclosure statement. Our invitation to present the one school at a time message was believed to be with unbiased interviewers. I believe we have that in Susie. Since accepting the invitation, we have learned that Mr. Chris Bessler, as an officer of Citizens for Better Schools, whose website reads, our main objective are to promote and pass school levies and bonds, and we believe we cannot afford to save money at the expense of our children and their future. Did pay $1,640 for a radio ad supporting the levy election question to another radio station. Citizens for Better Schools has long occupied the same building mailing address as Panhandle Alliance for Education, also known as PAFE. Chris Bessler is on the board of directors at Panhandle Alliance for Education, a.k.a. PAFE, as is Sean Woodward, who presented in the previous segment. Both of the previous segment and is LPOSD trustees Matt Meyer and Geraldine Lewis are on the board of Panhandle Alliance, also known as PAFE. Thus, an ideological and financial interest weighs heavily against the unbiased interview platform and against the advocates of one school at a time. Therefore, we suggest that Mr. Bessler, as a board director of this KRFY station, recuse himself from the second segment and provide equal time for the past segment that he had with Mr. Woodward.
Thank you for the, bringing your concerns. Dan, I would suggest very strongly that Chris has a very strong journalism background, and I know he can be objective, and I would ask you to give that a chance to be shown.
Well, let me answer. First of all, you said I'm an officer for Citizens for Better Schools. I'm not. I am on the PAFE board, and I do have a business in town that provides media marketing services to a variety of people. So, yes, we do work with Citizens for Better Schools. We work also with Republican candidates. We work with Democratic candidates. That's our business. So I'm not going to recuse myself on that basis. It is noted, however, you made the point that there's a potential conflict of interest here. I am on the PAFE board, and I have been for many years. But that is a group that supports better education for the community and supports our schools. So you've made the point. You point out there's a potential for a conflict of interest. And why don't we'll take that off the 5-minute opening statement. So you guys want to go ahead and get into your statement for, why you oppose the levy.
Okay. And beyond that, I'll make it short, the other minute or two in that 5 minutes. This levy is, full of secrecy from the conception. And I would make the challenge to Mr. Woodward that he produce on the website, the LPOSD website, each of his annual performance goals, redacting only the specific word or numbers identifying percentages to dollars related to distribution to him as a performance goal reward, as a bonus. There are bonuses that they did receive. Last year he received 10%. A quarter of the salaries are coming from a supplemental levy. Therefore, a quarter of his bonus is for satisfying objectives of the performance goals, which would be a quarter of $10,000 plus. I think his is $14,000 bonus. So a quarter of that would go or come from the supplemental levies. So a taxpayer levy is being used to take more taxpayer dollars from us. And I think that needs to be presented. As the last segment illustrated, it was the first time that I did hear that the board had directed him towards this facility plan levy. And I believe that's in that performance goal. Plenty of secrecy. We've been blocked from getting documentation as this process has gone along. And as this process has gone along in weeks, we have noticed things changing that weren't originally described or accurate. And I do have plenty of documentation if we ever get the time to go through it.
You actually got a couple more minutes. And Angelo, you could jump in as well.
No, I'll use that as the other part towards the disclosure.
Okay. Okay. Kinden and Matt, you have up to 5 minutes to make an opening statement.
Well, I'll go ahead and get started. This is Matt Deal, Facilities Director for the district. A little bit about myself. I've been with Lake Pendere School District for 6 years, worked for prior school districts for 14 years, most recently in Coeur d'Alene School District, worked in the Facilities Department. While in Coeur d'Alene, I was heavily involved with construction management, commissioning of buildings, which means on a new building, you go through and you verify everything that was installed and make sure it operates properly. I was involved with new construction project, Atlas Elementary School, extensive remodel of Lakes Middle School, new construction and remodel of Ramsey Elementary School, new construction remodel of Project Coeur d'Alene Alternative School. I've been a licensed journeyman in HVAC for over 20 years, licensed in Idaho. When I began working for Lake Pendere School District 6 years ago, I was really taken back at the condition of some of our facilities. when you have buildings built in the 50s that have never even had, you know, remodels or substantial upgrades, you have a real problem. Our maintenance staff does an excellent job of keeping the buildings somewhat functional, but time has run out. From the roofs to fire alarms to electrical, plumbing, and ventilation systems, these buildings are worn out and need to be replaced. This is an investment for future generations, an investment that prior generations made for us. It is our turn. The Facilities Planning Committee, led by professionals with over 100 years combined experience, did a very thorough job in drafting the master plan. The levy will improve safety at all district facilities. Most of our buildings do not have an emergency notification system for lockdown or other emergencies, failing or non-existent bell and clock systems. Many schools have exterior doors and hardware that are completely worn out. So, you know, security is a big issue. Buses, cars, and pedestrians co-mingle. This levy will resolve a lot of that. The plan was put through the review process of the school board and the public. Public input was gathered at school board meetings. It is time to get to work. Please vote yes for the levy.
And Kendon, you have about a 2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes. All right. Thank you, Chris. So the question is why I support the levy, and I'll straight up answer that question. I absolutely believe that the buildings identified by the Facilities Planning Committee for this levy have absolutely reached the end of their useful life, and the decision to demolish and rebuild is without question the right decision, as well as the most fiscally responsible option. To suggest we embark on a remodel is irresponsible, and there's no value in attempting to repeat the remodel debacle that another local municipality went through. The current buildings, Sandpoint Middle School, Northside Elementary, Washington Elementary, and Clark Park, do not provide our students and teachers an optimal learning environment for the 21st century student and future generations. I believe we're morally obligated to give our youth the very best opportunity to succeed. I'm admittedly an advocate for education. I've had the pleasure of seeing my two children graduate from Sandpoint High School and go on to college where, as a freshman and a senior, they are flourishing. And I believe that is absolutely because they received a very well-rounded education from passionate and professional educators in Lake Pendre School District. Something to note that your research didn't show up, Mr. Rose, is that I'm also a member of the PAFE board, and I'm very, very, very proud to be on that board. That's probably one of the most well-organized board of directors I've ever participated on. A couple of other points. Several individuals, in fact, that I have high respect for, have suggested that it's a far better option to educate as opposed to incarcerate. But I do recognize that without question, $55.1 million is a substantial amount of money, and no doubt this will add an expense for all property taxes, of which I am a property taxpayer. Yet I absolutely believe this is more realistically an investment in our future. And then finally, people have said, Kendon, for goodness sakes, you've got a business to run. You've got other things to do. You're an empty nester. You could go have fun. Why are you involved in this? And something, a tenet that I was raised under by my parents and my grandparents was, if good people don't get involved, bad people will rule.
Okay. Thank you very much for those opening statements. Now, let's give a couple minutes each if you want to make a rebuttal to some of the things that came out with those Dan and Angelo, would you like to, or just expand on anything? You got a couple more, let's say two minutes here for that.
Well, I think we're looking at how the whole plan was had. We have the Facilities Planning Committee. We're stated that there was public comment at the board meetings as to how this is going to be put together. And the Facilities Planning Committee met with virtually no public access. There was no minutes taken of anything that was said at the meetings. I mean, just done in secret, then presented to the board. There was a comment section for the public to make a comment. No questions could be answered, and that was that. It was passed and accepted. So if that's openness and public involvement, I beg to differ.
Okay. Dan, you have a comment.
Yeah, in that board meeting that was referenced, there were meetings every 2 weeks held by the LPOSD Board of Trustees. And that three-minute comment is a comment. There's no exchange of information that happened between the citizens and the board or any of the parties involved in the planning committee. There was no exchange. It's a one-way street.
Okay. Kendon and Matt, you've got 2 minutes if you'd like to make a rebuttal or a follow-up.
Sure, I'll comment on a couple of things. The concept of a levy, or excuse me, the concept of the bonus, which, you know, in my professional world, it's considered a deferred compensation plan. Ironically, I was accused this morning of wordsmithing, which that's a new phrase for me, but in this morning's letter to the editor, bonus, deferred comp, call it what you want. At the end of the day, Lisa and Sean were willing to take a reduced pay from the very beginning, and that they would earn the balance of that through a bonus, through a deferred comp, call it what you want, if they performed at a particular level, which they did. To suggest that the board directive has been, that this is the first time that's been suggested, that I'll just say that's not true. That has been suggested many times. I'm sure it's even been uttered from my lips that, you know, the board, as well as from Sean's, that the board tasked him with doing that. And you're right. The committee proceedings were not public, and that's intentional. I have never served on a committee where it's an open forum and a free-for-all. It was a select group of people that went through a very, very good process of analyzing the data and then presented it to the board of directors. Quite normal, whether it's in the nonprofit sector, the public sector, or the private sector.
Okay, Dan, you like a rebuttal? 90 seconds. Let's
very quickly.
Squeeze it down. Yeah.
There's an arrogance that the facility planning committee has demonstrated, and it's just been mentioned. When you're taking $55 million from taxpayers, and many of those taxpayers who are non-residents, they don't have a vote. The only vote they have is by contributing against, and they can go to www.lposdlevy.com, GoFundMe, and do that. The arrogance to say that the people aren't able to hear, aren't able to listen, aren't able to understand the decisions is a Seattle mentality, and it comes through PAFE, which Mr. Perry gladly recognizes himself with. And we really do need to look into that PAFE association and its relationship. It's a Seattle mentality that's coming to Idaho, and it's designed to take the taxpayers' money.
Okay. You also get a 90-second rebuttal now.
Thank
to the rebuttal.
You. Thank you. Yeah. I chuckle at the Seattle mentality from a person that grew up in the state of Idaho. So to suggest that is, I'm quite frankly offended, but... we have opened up the decision-making process from the committee through Mr. Teeter's report, which I think is about 148 pages. So at the end of the day, none of our process was private.
Okay. So let's turn to some questions, and these are questions we've gathered from people that submitted them as well as gleaned off of websites that both sides do have websites. Actually, let's throw that out. You've already mentioned yours, Dan. Can you give us your website address again?
Sure. It's lposdlevy.com.
And then the Citizens for Better Schools website is?
VoteOurSchools.com.
.org, yes.
.org.
Yeah.
.org.
Okay. So folks can get more information from those websites.
And I just want to reiterate that I'm absolutely positive that there's always two sides to an issue and that both groups here today feel passionately about their side of the issue. But to become an informed voter, you need to hear both sides. And we really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah.
And keeping that
again,
in mind.
It's a station identification. Okay. We haven't done that for a while.
Well, you know what? It's almost the top of the hour. And this is 88.5 KRFY Ponderay. That's where our tower is. And hopefully the hard ident doesn't come on at 9 o'clock. We'll see what happens. I'm not totally sure how to stop it.
Okay, because we are going to go a little bit longer now. We up to 30 minutes more, as long as our folks hang with us here. And again, we're speaking with supporters of the levy, Kindon Perry and Matt Deal, and we're speaking with opponents of these levy, Angelo Lanzacero, and Dan Rhodes. Let's go to a few questions here. And I'll pose this question for the supporters, and then we'll give each side an opportunity to address it as well. I guess one question I see coming up is, why weren't these facility needs addressed consistently over the years? And Kindon, you're probably in a good position to answer that.
I can talk about that a little bit. I think Matt can speak to that as well as the facilities director. Actually, we did start down this road a couple years ago when Dick Civitanich was still the superintendent back in, I want to say, 06 or thereabouts. And the district did pass a plant facilities levy in, maybe it was 08 and 09. And that finished Kootenai and Sagal. You know, then obviously as the financial crisis hit, you know, we didn't find that that would be a very, you know, wise time to go down that road. Previous to that, I don't know. I mean, I think there were facility efforts, you know, attempted in years past, but I don't know. You know, obviously they weren't successful. So, you know, I can't apologize or speak to what did or didn't happen 20, 25 years ago. All I can, you know, do is take a look at and participate in the process for coming to a solution today, you know, rather than poking holes at you know, what happened in the rearview mirror, but, you know, rather look through the windshield and try and determine how do we get to where we need to be in the future.
Okay. Matt, only 20 seconds left. Do you want to address anything else there?
No, I just mirror what Kindon said is, you know, we could look back into the 80s and point fingers at those folks that made decisions back then or didn't make decisions. And we need to look forward, and we need to do something to get these schools fixed.
Okay. Angelo and Dan, would you like to address that question? Facilities, the question was, why weren't these needs addressed consistently over the years?
Dan, you want to hit that?
No, I don't have too much information on years past. I would only say that it is a management issue that should have been taken up with members that are on the current board, and this superintendent only having been serving for 4 years. Other than that, I couldn't offer too much on that, except that it appears to be a lack of insight by management at all levels.
Okay. For this, I'll direct this one to the opponents. On the just looking at your website, which is lposdlevy.com, you have a statement there that the proposed levy is a culmination of a year-long process. Excuse me, that's not the question I wanted to ask. I wanted to ask a question. You do make you acknowledge that the state that the students have been performing well in our school district, and we actually have been raising our performance standards with the students. But you say we can't. I'm sorry, I did not copy this information out.
Do you want me to ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead and ask the question.
Okay. I think what you're trying to say is, one of the arguments on the opposition side is that you don't want to put the students' performance by paying for school buildings. You want to increase their ability to have a good education with, you know, any monies that are expended. Is that a correct statement?
Well, I think you've had David Teeter, your consultant, say that students do 6% better in a new facility. Well, I think that's just BS, really. I can't see that that has any validity. I would like to see the study that shows that.
It's not very important.
So Dan, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, there's those claims being made that the environment does have an impact. And I Googled acoustics, lighting, and that third word, ventilation. And I come up with a UK education funding website. I didn't see anything about 6%, 7%, or anything related to a measurable amount of increase in student performance. And it's not published anywhere in Dave Teeter's report. So there's a vacuum other than the claim itself.
All right. Susie, thanks for saving me on that question. I can't read my own notes. I rebuttal Matt on that.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the word ventilation. We have reams of studies that are easily found online that do, in fact, confirm good ventilation. I'll just speak about ventilation in particular. That's where my background is. It's extremely important. Poor ventilation contributes to high absenteeism and poor student performance. The study I'm referencing is from Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. In our schools, it's not uncommon to get CO2 readings in excess of 2,500 parts per million for periods of time. High levels definitely cause dysfunction in basic strategy, initiative, and information usage. This is not my research. This is from Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. We're asking teachers to teach and hold them accountable, but we are not providing a classroom conducive to learning.
Okay, rebuttal, Dan.
Yeah, 30 seconds, if that. I'm going to assume Mr. Deal did it. There was a CO2 study in the schools, each of the schools, that was done in 2014. It was on one day. It was at one test per school. There's no scientific, analysis that you can glean from doing one test at one school one day 2 years ago to make any claim that there's a CO2, environmental condition that is a hazard.
Okay. Matt, go ahead for 30 more seconds.
That's not accurate at all. There's on the display boards that we set up to kind of show the different problems we have, we only displayed a certain set of results from a certain day. But we have air quality testing data that goes way back when Rich Prill came through the district 10 years ago and had a lot of the same results. Rich Prill is he is from Washington State University. The Idaho State Department of Health had some grants, and they've been through our district. Same results. We have extensive testing. We displayed one test one time on the display boards. Nobody from this group has asked for any other of the data.
Okay. And rebuttal, Dan and Angelo.
Yeah. Matt, so 6 years ago, you took over your position, and now you're stating that 10 years ago, you've had results, CO2 results, back from 10 years. When you saw that there was a problem when you came on board 6 years ago, you have all that documentation. How come nothing was done to fix these systems?
Well, the systems mechanically are not capable of bringing in enough fresh air by design. They're systems from the 50s. We've definitely been talking and long-term planning for this day. Now we have a plan to make these corrections and replace these schools and resolve this problem.
And if I could just add, that when I say that there was one test, one day in 2014, we requested by a formal document request, and that's the information we got. So if the information that we seem to be giving out is incorrect or not quantifiable enough, it's because that's the information we've been given from a request.
Okay, let's move on to a different subject. This will be a question for the supporters. Of course, the opponents will have an opportunity as well. And I'm sure the committee weighed this out, but why not spread the projects and the levy out over more years with separate levy elections?
Well, there's a couple of reasons behind that. We certainly could have embarked on a bond, which is a very different vehicle. It spreads the cost out over 20 years. But obviously there's a cost to delaying this effort. Every year we calculated that at 4.5% construction inflation, that the cost to do all these buildings goes up by $2.2 million. There was also some strategy behind this. By doing the middle school and Washington at the same time. That saves some money on portables, and that we can move the kids from Washington into the middle school after the new middle school is finished. There's also some things called economies of scale. And working with a large project, we're going to have a little bit better position with architects, contractors, and a project manager. And then as we see, this process takes a lot of time, a lot of resources, both district and volunteer. To do that every other year on top of the supplemental levy, I think at some point in time we're going to run into burnout from not only our supporters, but also from the volunteers. The administration is going to, you know, be worn down. And quite frankly, I would question whether the opponents of this would really even buy into a one school at a time. I doubt that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kendon.
You're welcome.
Same question to you, Dan and Angelo. Why not spread the projects out over more years of separate levy elections?
And would that be more kind of easier to take? Would you be more in favor of that?
Yeah, there's an abundance of information to be discussed in each one of these questions. First, to answer Kenneth Perry, the accusation one school at a time, we would say that the alternative high school has been rated since 2001 as the worst school. It was rated in Teeter's initial report in January as the worst school, not the middle school. That would be the first school that we would look at as one school at a time. And in that discussion, and this is why we're saying that this is rushed through and the taxpayers are about to be financially ambushed, specifically the non-resident property owners. We have documentation where the LPOSD and a member of the Facilities Planning Committee initiated conversation with the Department of Education. And they redacted the information that we asked for. And the portion, and I'm going to read it, it's just a three-sentence paragraph. The timeliness of this response is important. It involves direction to our architects. Everything else after that comes forward from here was redacted from our original copy from LPOSD. But we got it as unredacted information from the Department of Education. Therefore, there's no reason to redact it. But it was to keep information from us. And it reads, as to where to build a new alternative high school to replace our current alternative high school, i.e. $5 to $10 million in new construction costs, again, which is off the table by the Planning Committee, intentionally. Thanks, Tim, for the definition of the rule of separate site at a different time and at a different time from ours is very ambiguous. Our legal opinion says it's not ambiguous.
Okay. Ken and Matt, a rebuttal on that?
Yes. You're right. We intentionally took Lake Pontiac High School off of the recommendation. In fact, it was when I, as the facilities chairperson, when I went before the board, I absolutely said we are taking Lake Pontiac High School off the list, because that the decision behind that comes with more than just does the building need to be replaced. Absolutely, the building needs to be replaced, but whether to replace it on that site, another site, what does it look like? How does that what I would consider unique cohort of students, how does their next chapter look for the next 50 years? And we did not want to be hasty in that decision. So therefore, yeah, we took that one off the table. But I guess I would also say, throwing Lake Pontiac High School off the table, how does the one school at a time concept really taste to you? I don't think you answered the question.
Okay, so back to you, Dan and Angelo.
I don't think anyone, except a real small majority in town, is against spending money for student education. We definitely are not, even though we're opponents of the levy. I mean, the students need to be educated. They need to be educated in a proper environment. We don't have a problem with that. The problem that we have is that this whole scheme was cooked up without public notice, with no public input. There's nebulous things about what's going to be done, when it's going to be done, how it's going to be done. You know, there's no big plan. There's no plans and specifications. We're just going to go along. We'll grab the money first, and then we'll figure out what we can do with it. I mean, that's not fiscally responsible.
You have 30 seconds if you want to add to that, Dan.
Again, thank you. That's an admission that a full, comprehensive, well-thought-out plan is not in effect. You're talking about potential perils of a legal nature and financing that they're not discussing, and they've intentionally taken it off the table until after the election. It needs to be in the plan. It needs to be put in the plan because students might have to be moved around from building to building, and that definitely needs to be discussed, and it is absolutely not.
Okay. Rebuttal for 90 seconds, Matt.
Yeah, we absolutely stand behind our facility master plan. We absolutely stand behind our transparency. Everything can be found on our website. There's no hidden agendas. There's nothing cooked up here. This is straightforward, well thought out, honest plan to do what's best for kids in education.
Okay.
Can I get a rebuttal on that?
Okay. Oh, sure. Okay. We each get a rebuttal, so go for it there, Angelo.
So I had questioned Matt's capability of doing an assessment on the facilities. So now they have come back and said that they hired a professional firm to assess all the buildings. We don't have any public documentation as to the report, what firm it was, when it was done. There's none of that.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. We did bring in some associates of Dave Teeters. The man that went through and followed my initial assessments was Doug Nichols, who happens to have 44 years of experience in school design, building, construction, management. He is a licensed architect. When initially Dave Teeter asked, he said, you know, Matt, you have an intimate knowledge of these buildings that we don't want to let that slip past us. So I did the initial assessments, absolutely. And it was absolutely third-party verified by professional architect.
And that they walked through the building as well?
They absolutely walked through the buildings. Not all of them with me, some of them with my staff when I wasn't available.
Angelo.
So is that report from Mr. Nichols available to the public?
The report is on the same form. They just updated and changed some of the scores that I had indicated.
Okay, I'm not sure. That sounds a little evasive to me. Is there a evaluation form signed by him with those numbers and anything other than we agree or disagree with some of your numbers? And where do we find that document?
They updated my document. No, we didn't notate their name on that. And looking back on that, that was a mistake. They should have been notated at the bottom.
But I guess the question would be, is there a document available that people could examine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The documents available are in our master plan. Those are the final documents that were third-party verified.
But that's the document that's signed by you.
Right. It has my name typed on the bottom.
Right. So we have no third-party verification because the document is signed by you.
Well, and that was probably something we should have had them initial those.
Okay.
Well, can we get that out into the public vein now? Can we get a letter from Nichols that he states that he's inspected all these facilities and he's come to the determination that facilities need to be replaced?
Absolutely. I'm sure he'd be happy to provide that.
Can we do that within the next 24 hours so the people of the public can have a chance before less than 1 week to the levy?
Okay. Good question. Let's have one answer to that, and then we'll move on to the next subject.
Because I have a question.
Okay, I absolutely won't promise that we can get that answer within 24 hours, because I don't know where that man is right now, but we will absolutely make a yeoman's effort to reach out to him and see if he would put something on paper to satisfy, you know, what's the question.
Okay. All right, next question.
Taking a deep breath, it sounds like I'm going to address the opponents to the levy with this, but like all the questions, they go both ways. So this rebuttal process is working. It seems like transparency, as we just found out, is one of your concerns. And I know other concerns because I've heard various from various places, actually, the real cost and the real cost to the taxpayers, the cost that can change and grow and you know, there's this $55 million levy, but over time, will that change because of past history, I guess? And this is all just stuff I've read. And also, there's various ideas of what it will really cost the taxpayers. So to the opponents, are these some of your concerns, and could you address those for a moment? There's the transparency, the cost of the levy itself, and that cost going up over time to facilitate the change in the facilities, and the cost to the taxpayer.
I don't want to give the impression that I think that you know, anybody's trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. Anybody has, you know, ulterior motives. I'm just looking at the process itself. When we start out with a secret process with no public involvement, with a facility planning committee, which is packed with the fellow travelers from different organizations, past board members, where is the taxpayer in all this? The taxpayer, the guy that's going to pay the bill, he is not represented. So, you know, now we come to the point where, okay, we're asked to go and vote for this. Well, we really don't have information as to what the hard numbers are. I mean, we could say $55.1 million, but, you know, you look at cost overruns on other public projects that have happened in Bonner County. I mean, it could be $100 million. You know, no study was done. We don't have any hard cost estimates from architects or engineers as to a line item, as to, well, this item is going to cost this much, this item is going to cost this much. I mean, you don't have any of that stuff done out front. So we're just going in with a big pot of money, and we're going to start shooting money here, there, and everywhere and see what we can get done. That's really not a good fiscal outcome.
Okay. 90 seconds for a rebuttal, Kenan and Matt.
All right. Thanks, Chris. I would say to that we did utilize professionals, and we utilize people that are have credibility in their industry to provide us what, in their professional experience, I've got Mr. Teeter's resume here, and it's about seven pages long, five of it of different school districts and municipalities that he's worked with. In more than one occasion, there's repeated companies. So that tells me that Mr. Teeter, when he is tasked with something or hired to do a job, he delivers. Otherwise, people aren't going to invite him back. So there's value in utilizing professionals that's what they do for a living. And then you trust them. Because that seems to be something that keeps coming up. And I absolutely trust Dave Teeter and all of his associates, as well as the administration of Lake Pendre School District. And then the other part of it is to say, okay, we're going to go out and going to line item the cost of this whole project. Well, that costs money. And the district doesn't have a golden pot of money to reach into. And in a construction process, this is not abnormal. I mean, we've used, once again, sound professional advice to say this is what in our experience in this region it costs to do this particular project. So go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, and to piggyback back on that, it's been suggested that we design these schools now before we ask the taxpayers to approve the project. The design on this scope of work is well over $2 million. We're not going to spend over $2 million of taxpayers' dollars before the taxpayers approve the projects. That's not the way it's done.
Okay.
Before we go to the rebuttal, I know you guys have one. Just to clarify, the original assessment by Dave Teeter's, his report, is available to the taxpayers.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just wanted to, I thought so, but I wasn't sure.
We were just talking about that. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't necessarily have a negative opinion about Mr. Teeter or his work. I know how this all started. And I'd like to take you back to a article in the Reader this week. And it states that Teeter Consulting, a team with a professional background in school inspection and no ties to the district for the job. Mr. Perry just announced his four-page resume. If you look at his four-page resume, in there three times you'll see that he did work for LPOSD in the past. So that newspaper article is giving the reader and the voter a false impression that there is a, neutral objective opinion. Mr. Perry says when they, you know, have value, they come back. There obviously is a value the LPOSD wants to make with Mr. Teeter. And this article has, according to Mr. Woodward, all over it. So I'm assuming that information came from Mr. Woodward, though it was written by Cameron Rasmussen. We don't have any whatsoever. There's no mention at any one place of any assessment to a hazmat assessment, whether any of these buildings that are going to be torn down or remodeled have any hazmat condition in them. And that's where the overruns are going to come costly if you haven't even done that assessment up front. All this whole time, we have heard a $200 per square foot reconstruction price. Then this week we hear it's $260, including soft numbers in that amount. I don't think that hazmat assessment figure is included in that soft amount, and $200 is construction, not demolition.
Okay. Now let's go to a shorter rebuttal. It's just 60 seconds, please, from Kindon and Matt, if you'd like to respond.
Yeah, all those costs are included.
Where are they identified? Because if you're doing an assessment with a hazmat condition, you're going to have paperwork that says there isn't, and I'm putting my name on it. Where's that document?
Oh, I'm not saying that there has been an additional hazmat screening, but our buildings have been declared asbestos-free. That was part of the last plant facility levy. And there's absolutely figured into the $260 per square foot dealing with any unknown hazardous materials that they come across.
One rebuttal opportunity there? Okay. Okay, we are running out of time. We're going to try to wrap this up by 9:30, so we're going to not have a lot of time. I think what we'd like to go out with is a couple minutes for each side to make a closing statement. And we'll start off with, you guys went first, so we'll start off with Matt and Kindon about, you know, why you would like to urge people to support the levy. And you got up to 2 minutes.
Truthfully, Chris, I don't have a lot more to say other than what we've already said. I respect everybody's opinion. That's the beauty of the United States of America. It's democracy. Everybody gets their opportunity to voice their opinion. Everybody gets their opportunity to vote. What I would say is make that decision when you vote or as you go through this process based on facts. And I am absolutely positive that our committee, the school board, and everybody is operating under the premise of sound facts. I'll point out, you know, that we had a discussion the other day about, you know, Kootenai Elementary School, that it wasn't finished, that it was supposed to have 11 classrooms that only had 9. I'll gladly share that with you, sir. That shows the 11 new classrooms at Kootenai Elementary that were finished about $1.2 million under budget. So that kind of goes back also to the credibility of the current administration and the board and the community that's trying to bring this project to a successful fruition. So we could probably spend the rest of the day here debating back and forth, but we're not going to because Chris has to go.
We all do.
And I'll want lunch. So yeah, Matt, if you want to
tag on another 30 or 40 seconds there.
No, I just mirror what Kindon said. This is a well thought out process. There's nothing hidden, no hidden agendas. There's no secrets. There's no conspiracy theory here. This is all honest, transparent data. It's easily accessed. If you have any questions, please contact Sean Woodward, Lisa Howells, or myself. Thank you very much for voting yes.
Okay. We have 2 minutes now for Angelo and Dan.
So I would await the assessment by Mr. Nichols and see that that's made available to the public. And I would say go and vote on the 30th, and let's have a big turnout.
I would also urge the voters to vote against and vote for one school at a time and have the voter be able to review each project on its specific merit. This is a money tranche that proponents for it even admit that you'll get tired of paying for in the future. I doubt whether they really believe that they'll be able to pass another one. And therefore, LPO, who's been promised, just take a seat, we'll get to you in the future, may never have a future. This is a large amount of money. It requires, it's the duty of the taxpayer to make demands of the district. The district, in the very end, is making a valiant approach to get this information out, but their intention was to neglect it from the public's view for months. And they made sure they contacted their school network to get out to vote, but they did not make that effort to the regular taxpayer until just recently, and only because the opposition spoke up. The pay-as-you-go plan, which does one school at a time, actually comes out to a less price. It's $52 million versus $53 million. So the argument to say that we can't do it is incorrect. The 4.5% inflation rate is factored into all those school costs done over time per Piper Jaffray, who is the financial people involved in the financial committee plan. The school district is not mandated to create a facility legacy, which is in their emails. The people are smart enough to understand when they're being taken advantage of, and I appreciate their attention to both sides.
Okay. Well, thank you, both sides. I know there's always a rebuttal to be had, and Kenan is saying he'd like to say something, but we really need to cut it off, to be fair.
It was more a question.
Okay.
Rebuttal.
Okay. Well, we'll have to pick it up off right. The air. And I do want to tell folks that thank you very our guests again. Thank you for coming in. The voting is Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. You vote at your regular polling place. If you have any question about that, you could go to the county elections office page on the county website. SandpointElections.com also has non-biased information. As well as you can vote absentee up until Friday. That means you just go to the county elections office and ask to vote there.
Yeah, pick up a ballot. And we do want to thank you. I personally thank you, Dan Rose, Angelo Lazzaro, Kendon Perry, and Matt Deal. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Oh, right. Nice. I got
thank
it.
You. Thank you.
You know, obviously everyone cares about this, and that's an important part of being a citizen of our community. So thank you again. And we do want to encourage our listeners to get out and vote, just like everyone here said.
Yeah.
And this interview will be podcast on our website, krfy.org, later in the day if you want to rehear it or send it to your friends. We're going to go out today and with Elton John and Kiki D. This was the number one song in 1967. Can you guess what it is? Don't go breaking my heart. Have a great day.
Thank you.